This is Midnight Alchemy with your host Jason Allen on the Left Coast Media Network. And now here's Jason.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever and whenever you are. This is Midnight Alchemy, and I am Jason Allen. Hello there. I hope this finds you well. Today, we have the second part of the Jilly Maria Psychic Medium interview. And so, you know what? Instead of yakking, let's get right to it.
So nobody in my family essentially knows how to feel emotions, basically. And so it's very, exactly. And so it's very hard. And I think more so for men, because our men have been raised in like stiff upper lip. Emotion is weakness, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And so being in the space of, you know, when your kids get emotional, when your kids, you know, scrape a knee, or your wife's having a bad day, or like, you know, if, God forbid, you know, there's a miscarriage in your family or whatever. And our women are like struggling and they want to be led. And our men fall down by default.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to step into their emotion, feel that 20, 30, 40, 50 years, whatever it is, of accumulated emotion. In order to be open to then holding the space for somebody else to do it, because they're still in the, oh my God, if I feel emotion, then they feel like their stuff coming up.
Yeah.
And so they shut everything down.
Right.
Oh, it's going to be okay. And they give someone, or like, you know, stiff upper lip, you know, rub some dirt on it and keep going. Now, I'm a baseball fan. I'm the first person to say, jokingly,
yeah,
rub some dirt on it and keep going. But I also know when to stop and go, you need a hug. Like, how can I support you? Like, let's get that emotion out.
Yeah.
Like, scream and yell and do what you need to do so that you can be available for your spouse, for your children, for the people that need you. And that's one of the mistakes that I see a lot of people making. And again, we're not doing it deliberately, but if you don't have any training,
yeah,
you don't have training. I mean, you know, and I end up telling people all the time, you know, people, you know, feel guilt or shame, or they feel crappy because they don't know how to do anything. I'm like, think about the things that you do on a daily basis. Tying your shoes, driving your car, boiling water, you know, brushing your teeth, using your cell phone, using your laptop, getting on Zoom, turning on lights, paying bills, all the things that you do as an adult. Someone had to teach you how to do.
Yeah.
All of it. So it makes sense then that if you never learned how to feel your emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that doesn't make you wrong or bad or whatever. It just means, oh, hey, you know, I tell people, I'm like, you know, when I talk to people, like, I go in the professions usually and I'll say, what do you do for a living? And they'll tell me, and I'll say, okay, did someone have to teach you how to do that? Well, yeah. I'm like, you didn't come out of your mom knowing how to cook or clean or, you know, run a laptop. Well,
yeah.
No. And I'll say, okay. So by the same token, learning how to feel our emotions and deal with them correctly is just something else I have to learn.
Right.
Because it,
yeah.
And here's the thing. Doesn't that make it less of a shame, guilt thing if you're just saying, oh yeah, you know what? It's like learning how to drive a car. Someone had to teach you. It's like learning how to, you know, we all learn how to write our names or, you know, drink water or, you know, cook eggs or all the things we do in life,
yeah,
differently. And so once you learn how to do what you're doing, like, okay, let me teach you how to feel emotions. It's, you know, I'm like, and I tell people, I'm like, your physical survival record to this exact moment is 100%. You've nailed it to this moment. Okay. So now we got to go back and we got to feel the emotions that are unspent. So the grief, the anger, the resentment, the, you know, every husband, you know, knows that there's things that irritate the crap out of his wife about what he does.
Yeah.
And vice versa, every wife has things, you know, we both sexes have things that, oh my God, I wish you would stop up about. And a lot of times I end up saying to people, well, have you ever told him that it bothers you? And I've had people look at me like I have three heads. And I'm like, well, I'm just going to, when I'm dead, I'm going to haunt him. I'm like, that's not really how that works, but okay. And they're like, well, I'm like, why don't you just say it now and say, you know, it would be amazing if you would, whatever. You know, or my, I discovered, I took the five love languages test and I discovered that I am a quality time, you know, quality time and a physical touch person. So while I completely adore the roses that you bring home to me weekly, I would much rather a really long hug. Take that $50 that you, you know, and I had someone a couple years ago. I said, tell your husband to take the $50 he's going to spend on roses on Valentine's Day. And I go to Costco a week prior and get some, get two really nice filet mignons or whatever you like. And I said, and then go and tell him that you want to, you want him to arrange a babysitter for the weekend closest to Valentine's Day. And the two of you go off on a romantic weekend, don't care where. It can be a staycation. But the point of fact is, I'm like, the exercise in this is asking for specifically what you want. And saying, you know, if you're going to spend the money, this is exactly what I want. This is because every man wants to please his wife, his girlfriend, his partner, whatever titles you have, cool, rock on. But the point is that we want to please the other person. So instead of making assumptions, why don't we just ask what would please you? And asking your husband, like, you know, one of my friends one year was going to go, and she had this wild idea about how she was going to go spend like $200 on this brand new, they had this brand new lingerie collection at Victoria's Secret. And she was like, oh my God. And I said, is your husband that kind of person? Because I didn't know him well, but I knew him enough to know that I felt like that wasn't really going to do much for him. So I said, why don't you ask him, like, if I was going to rock your world for your birthday, what would I do? And she was like, oh God, you know. And she was so scared to ask him. So she asked him, he goes, you know what I want to do? He goes, I want to go to, there's a Lego conference coming up. The man has probably 5,000 sets of Legos. Like, he has a whole Lego room. Which is really cool, whether you're into Legos or not, it's really cool. But he wanted to go to this Lego conference. It was like a 5-hour drive from their house. And he goes, we'll get, you know, he's like, it's in Pennsylvania. He goes, so this is my thought. He's like, why don't we get our room in the Poconos? And we can drive in for the conference during the day. And we'll have a romantic dinner. And it was like, and I was like, dude, can I, if you don't want it, I'll take it. trying to go, okay, do you see? And she was like, oh my God, it'll be the best time, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, and you were afraid to ask. But it's teaching people to get out of that fear and resentment track. Because here's the thing, that's what happens when someone passes away, is you find, is there's always regrets. And there's always, I wish, woulda, coulda, shoulda. So step out of the fear. Like, if I can share, you know, one thing that I've learned from mediumship, other than, you know, dead people wanting to share with us, like, don't, you know, don't tear things down, like, appreciate them for the pieces that are in them, is have the hard conversations now so that you don't have regrets. Because people do, they get to that space where it's like, you know, I regret that I didn't do this, and I regret that I didn't do that. And that's all fear. Well, what if they say, you know, what if my husband doesn't, you know, she's like, well, what if my husband says no? Okay, well, then at least you asked. At least you tried. And well, what if my wife doesn't like that? Well, I'd rather be asked, personally. Hey, babe, you know, we're approaching our 15th wedding anniversary. You know, what do you want? I want a crate of daffodil bulbs. Okay, well, here's the thing. They're going to rise. I'm going to get 6 weeks of beauty out of them. Year after year after year. Like, a diamond is really pretty. I'm not saying, I won't say no to it, but I would rather have daffodils. I would rather have the experience and the time than I would a thing. And I think most of us, if we had to do over again with certain things, we would definitely choose the time and the experiences. And I think that, you know, as a medium, being able to share those things and know those things and, you know, really be in the space of how do I contribute? How do I contribute more? How do I, like, if I'm going to heal a thing, if I'm going to go into the space of like, how do I heal this? You know, asking that question now, how do I honor this person? Because it's one of the things that I practice in the, you know, on the daily is, you know, saying to my deceased friends and my grandparents, like, you know, how do I honor you? How do I, what can I do? You know, besides saying your name, which happens anyway, what can I do to honor you?
Yeah.
And I find so often that, you know, people get into a space of where they dishonor, you know, by never speak, don't speak their name. You know, I don't want to hear that person's name. And I'm like, well, you know, and there's a lot of people like this where they haven't grieved. They haven't, you know, dealt with their, they've got this, it's like, and I always talk about, it's like if you have this gaping wound, like you're, you know, someone shot you and you're running around like, oh no, it's fine. There's blood, you know, coming out of your fingers and you're like down here like, oh God, oh no, I'm fine, I'm fine. How many of us run around saying, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Or we hide behind a computer screen or text messaging.
Sure.
I'm fine. And it's like, okay, but the person wants you to get well. Feel your grief, honor them. That's how you honor them, is by saying their name. Because so many people, I've had people over the years say, oh, I'm sorry I brought up so-and-so. Never be sorry for bringing, you know, I'm sorry, oh God, I reminded you of them. I promise you, anybody that has ever lost a loved one, you didn't remind them of anything. They did not forget.
Yeah.
Because we don't forget. It's, you know, it's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I probably, you know, poked a wound for you, Michael. You didn't poke a wound for me. I'm glad that you brought him up. Happy to tell you stories about my best friend. Happy to tell you stories about my other best friend.
Yeah.
Happy to tell you stories about my grandma. Delighted to share things, anecdotes with you.
Yeah.
Delighted to share with you, you know, what this person did. I mean, I got to share with one of my best friends, his, when he passed away in 2018. And this past summer, I got to share the napkin story and with his parents, and they both had never heard this, and they're like, I need to know what this is. And so I was explaining to them, you know, what napkin math is, and they both were like, thank you so much for sharing. And it's, you know, it's hard when someone passes away, because again, our society says like, oh, we had the celebration of life, okay, we're done now,
right,
we're never going to talk about them again, because, you know, we're good, it's, you know, they passed on, and I'm like, it's the flip.
Yeah.
And I always tell them, like, your grief process does not end at the celebration of life. It begins when everybody else goes on.
Right.
It begins when everybody else is like, oh, you know, we did the meal training, we did the this and we did the that and whatever. It begins then. It begins when all the attention dies off and you're left with your emotions, with your grief, with your sadness, with this hole in your home, with the realization that you go and something happens, and you want to text this person, you grab your phone and you go, oh crap. When something really cool happens and you want to reach out and text, or you want to say, hey, do you want to get together and watch a game? And you realize that you can't, and you know in your brain that the person's been gone.
Yeah.
But in that moment, you grab your phone and you want, oh, I would love, oh, she would love this, he would love this. And you go to,
yeah. Gosh. Right.
And that's when it starts. And that's when most people walk away, right? They're done. Or it's like, oh, that happened, you know, that happened 5 years ago. Or that happened, you know, there was someone that said, well, that happened 200 years ago. And I go, it's still not dealt with.
Yeah.
If we are still using that as a point of division, it's unresolved.
Yeah. Yeah. And, period. You know, that makes me appreciate even more the Day of Dead, that remembrance. That energy that comes with remembering this person, that person, the other person, and you're right, brings everything closer, right?
And we do, you know, and we do it. So we, our society, and I can't speak to other countries, but I can say that, you know, in the United States, I think we do ourselves a huge disservice, because we are atrocious at grieving, we are atrocious at feeling emotion. And we make fun of people. Oh, you're in your feels. Oh, you caught feelings, you know, and it's like, why are we doing that? Like, why are we? And here's the thing, because here's what I know for sure also, is that when someone can anchor and control your anger, for example, they control you. When you haven't felt your emotions, when you just allow yourself to feel your anger, your resentment, your whatever, grief, shame, guilt, whatever, someone can weaponize that. And we do and honestly, there's a lot of politicians that do a brilliant job of it, as opposed to being in a space of, yeah, I feel anger and it's really sucks. And I'm doing the best I can to get through it. And letting that be a fact-based thing, right? As opposed to being like, sure, yeah, I'm going to break down in tears, but then I'm going to move through that layer. So real, and I always tell people, like, if someone brings up, and oh, I'm sorry I made you angry, I'm like, you didn't have the power to make me anything. I don't give that kind of power away to people. But thank you for showing me where I'm still feeling anger. Thank you for showing me that I still have a wound that I need to heal.
Yeah.
Because it's high time that I heal that.
Right, right.
And it's so interesting when I say it, when people will say, wait a minute, what? And I'm like, can you be not happy, but can you be in gratitude that someone showed you where you still have anger you need to heal?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to going, they made me so angry.
Right.
Man, you gave a lot of power away in that one. As opposed to saying, I'm really glad that politicians in the U.S. bring up my anger so I know that it's still there so I can work on resolving it and I can get underneath why I'm angry.
Yeah.
Like, what am I afraid of? And again, that goes back to the same thing is, you know, being in the space of being able to be a medium and communicate with people who passed away. You know, and I've had a lot of people go, oh, that's really cute. I'm like, you know, it's not a party favor thing. And it's one of those things that, you know, drives, you know, one of my friends who's an attorney, it drives her nuts because she's like, but you're supposed to. And I'm like, you know, I would never put, because a lot of times, a lot of people in this, in the healing arts will put like for entertainment purposes only as a, and I'm like, I don't think feelings are entertainment. Energy and motion isn't entertainment, you know, and I'm not a doctor. So if I'm giving you, you know, if I'm giving you psychic advice, if I'm sharing something in the Akashic Records with you, I would of course recommend that you also go see your doctor if your gut feeling is that you need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, if I go back and look at, you know, when I first started all this to now, you know, 6 or 7 years, my track record is pretty solid.
Yeah.
You know, but again, it's allowing myself to be a conduit and just being, you know, like a, you know, piping for information. And so, you know, I think that it's incumbent upon us to respect our emotions and learn to, especially as men, if you need a therapist, if you need a coach, if you need someone to hold the space for you to feel your emotions so that you can have a better relationship with your spouse, if you realize that you're avoiding emotion because you don't know how to feel it or deal with it, there's zero shame in asking for support. There is zero shame. And I mean, it's one of my goals in my, you know, I went to a personal development seminar last week and they said, what's, you know, what did you write down for like, if you had, you know, all the money and all the time in the world? And I said, it is my mission. It's part of my vision for my lifetime is to make going to, you know, to a third party person, whether it is a coach like myself, a therapist, a psychiatrist, a shrink, a counselor, you know, whatever you want to label, you want to throw on, whatever avenue fits you, a third party person to hear you, help you reframe, help you, you know, hear you so that you can be heard and validated and be able to say, yeah, you were totally right to be angry about that. Now we're holding on to anger. We're drinking poison, expecting someone else to die.
Right.
And then we're furious with that person because they're not dying. You know, you're handing someone a glass of wine, wanting them to get drunk with you. And they're like, I'm sober. Thanks. And you're like, but I need you to get drunk so we can have a knockdown, drag out screaming match. And it's like, why can't you just say what you need to say? Because we were never taught to do that.
No, not at all.
You know, so it's like being in the space of like, I'm going to hold space for you, you know, to just, and I told one of my friends that recently, I said, I'm going to hold the space for you. I'm not taking any of this personally. I'm going to hold the bucket for you. And you just do what you need to do.
Right.
And, you know, to sit there and be like, wait, what? And it's like, but I was always talking, okay, but this is how I'm doing it. Yeah. I love you. Do what you need to do. If you need to vomit, scream, yell, say whatever you need to say. I'm a terrible person. I suck, whatever, whatever, whatever. And that went on for about an hour and a half. And she was like, I'm wrung out. but I feel so much better. And I'm like, and no one got hurt.
Yeah.
She said, but I said all these things to you. I said, no, I held the bucket. They're not personal. Now I'm going to go dump the bucket out and rinse it out. Give it a good little power wash in the shower and we're good.
Yeah. Hey, you mentioned the Akashic Records.
Yes.
For those who don't know what it is, or maybe have heard it but don't really fully understand, can you go a little bit into that?
Sure. So the Akashic Records are a record of every thought, word, and deed of your soul since its inception. Houses, objects, people, events have Akashic Records. So like if you, for example, like you as a person have an Akashic Record, but so do houses. So like if you go, if you like, let's say they, you know, if you are in a space where you're looking at a, like, let's say there's a 200-year-old house in Virginia. And let's say the only way to save that house is to move it because they're putting a highway in and they need that house gone. So they're either going to demolish it or you're going to move it. So they get that house up and, on rollers and they move it, you know, to someplace where it's going to be safe. And the energy that was in that house, the foundation of it, all the things that happened in that 200 plus years of that history are still there.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So there's an Akashic record of it. And that honestly is one of my favorite things. I love reading the Akashic records. And, what I love even more now is coming into the space of, this is the issue that we've encountered. Now let's resolve it. And that is something that I get to do in my coaching, and I'm shifting dramatically my coaching at the end of this year and then into 2024 and beyond, is that I used to be like, oh, I really love giving people, you know, the information. But then I realized a lot of times that the human being is getting the information, but they're not doing anything with it. And a lot of times people will get stuck, right? They'll be like, oh yeah, I know I got to change something. You know, I got to do something. You know, and I'll say, okay, do you want to be in the same place? You know, like right now we're on the first day of Q4 for 2023. And saying to people, do you want, where are you versus January 1, 2023? So it's incumbent upon people to take that piece of information and then use it. Like, is it in my best and highest interest? Like when I do a reading, for example, I'll say, is it in my best and highest interest to, you know, someone will say, is it in my best and highest interest to accept the job that I've been offered? You know, what do my guides have to tell me? We all have spirit guides. What do my guides want to share with me about the possibility of a move to Nova Scotia or LA or whatever? And, you know, sometimes they'll just say yes or no, but a lot of times there's nuances to situations, right? So someone will say, you know, is it in my best and highest interest to, you know, self-publish my book as an example? And, you know, someone asked me that question, you know, May of this year, I think. And I said, and I, you know, again, it's not a function of memory. It's just pieces that will stick out because of how the person would come back later or whatever. And the person said, you know, I messaged me after the fact and said, I'm kind of disappointed in the answer that you gave me. And I said, okay. And I mean, again, I'm in a space now where when I first started it, I was very cognizant of the fact that I was a human and I, my people pleaser, you know, was very much out and about. And I had to get to a space where I was like, you know what, I'm going to share with people the information I get. And if they don't like it, that's not my business.
Right.
And because again, I'm a conduit. If you're on the phone with somebody and you're telling them you want a divorce or you're telling them you want to get married or you're telling them that the flight's canceled or whatever, the phone doesn't go, oh, can't hear that, and shut down. It doesn't do that, right? Yeah. And so that's the thing, is like being in a space where I get to say, and again, I get to, you know, it's a privilege to be a reader. It's a privilege to be able to share information with somebody. And sometimes the answer is no. Sometimes you end up sharing heartbreaking information with some, you know, with people. Sometimes you end up, say, in this person in particular that had asked me about self-publishing. And I said, no, there's something glitchy about it. There's something that you either are going to need to know and it's going to cost you a lot of money, or there's something going on that it's not a good idea, at least not the way that you're thinking about going.
Yeah.
And she came back to me like 3 months later and said, I am so glad. She's like, I was pissed at you. I was so angry with you because I wanted to publish this book. And, you know, I said, okay, well, I'm like, she's like, but I am so glad I listened to you and didn't go with this person. And I said, okay. And she's like, well, first of all, she went bankrupt. And second of all, the person that she was working with, I contacted them directly. And she got so angry with me for contacting this publishing house directly. And she said, well, how? She said, if I wanted to do a run of, let's say, 200 books, and, you know, how much would it cost me and such and so forth? And they were charging like a third of what her friend was trying to get her to invest. So that was the first thing. And I said, keep going. I said, keep shopping it to a couple other publishers. Look up your niches, see what you like, the people that shop and, you know, service a specific niche, and keep shopping it. And she found a publisher, like her 10th one. She found someone that was like, oh my God, this is the best book, and blah, blah, blah. And the rest is history. She's got a, you know, she's got a bestseller, and it's, you know, fantastic and all the things. And so, you know, it's one of my, you know, the other thing I love about the Akashic Records is being able to read objects. And what the friend of mine that I told you about earlier that owns the crystal shop, he loves to go, oh, here, take the, close your eyes, take this in your hand and tell me what you get. It's one of his favorite things to do. And so I can get the history off the where the crystal's been. And he put this one crystal on my hand and said, okay, what are you getting? What are you feeling? And I all of a sudden started seeing people running, and I could feel like my knees getting knocked out from underneath me. And I'm like, there's so much chaos, you know, like there's so much chaos. And I said, you know, it was like, I'm like, I could see people falling and people being left behind. And I was, you know, saying all the things. And I finally just like startled myself and opened my eyes. And I'm like, what is this? And he said, he was telling me what it was. And he's like, it's from the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo. And I said, okay. I said, you good with me to clear all these? And he's like, sure. So I immediately, like, he had like a bag of like 200 of them that he'd gotten. He'd purchased from a crystal, from a dealer that had crystals at this crystal shop. And so I said, can I clear this and smudge it? He's like, yes, you can. So I was like clearing and smudging them. And he said, what happened? And I said, you know, even if you're ethically sourcing something, a lot of times it can at some point end up in hands, or because of the country of origin where it started and chaos going on there, you can end up with things that you're like, whoa. And I'm like, no, you know, the person that's getting this doesn't really need to know. Like, it's not going to serve them to know that this came from here. Like, it's not going to serve them to feel someone else's chaos because it's not theirs to resolve. They're using this for a specific, the crystal for a specific purpose that it has as a crystal innately, no matter where it came from. But it's always interesting how, you know, like when I read houses too, is it's, you know, people will say, you know, don't go into the history of the house. And I'll say, I'm not going to, because I'm like, the house has got its own history to tell me. Because old houses, you know, and for me, it's like 100 years old or more. You know, they are not wanting to share the grand parties. And sometimes, you know, sometimes an owner will, you know, step forward and they'll say, I loved, you know, so, you know, having dances and balls in my house, and I love throwing parties. But more often than not, it's the indentured servants. It's the stories that nobody tells. It's the, you know, someone passing away in the house, or, you know, like someone losing a baby to yellow fever, or like someone said, you know, being like, well, they originally had 15 children and there's 9 that you know about. And it was very common, super common. Before we had funeral homes, people died in their houses. And that's not like, ew, it's just a fact. And so it's being in the space of like, that doesn't necessarily mean there's anything creepy or wrong, you know, because you can have apparitions, and you can have, you know, dead people staying in houses because they really love the house. And, you know, as opposed to like, well, why would I move? I mean, or if like when I see people restoring houses and they're like, I had this experience, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, they're really happy that you're restoring the house because they thought it was going to be demolished. And so they're really thrilled that you're restoring it. And, you know, I mean, it just, it's such a wide field. And like being, I use the Akashic Records as a container, and I also use it as a conduit for information. And I really love the depth you can have in the Akashic records and being in the space of all the different ways you can work with the Akashic records. And it blends well with mediumship to be able to say, again, dead people want us happy for the most part, but they will definitely tell you, like, if you're doing something with a house, they will definitely tell you if they are not happy. They will definitely tell you if, they want you not to, do a thing. I was actually years and years ago, and this is something that I at the time didn't know because I was not in my gifts consciously at that time. But I used to work for a builder in Florida, and we had this house that was built in the back of a cul-de-sac. And I remember the owner looking at a plat, like we were this woman had was having every conceivable problem with her house you could possibly have. And she was like, "This should not be happening with a brand new house." And I was like, "You're totally right. It should." And her house was like a year old. And she was having issue at like leaks and weird crap happening and stuff that just should not have been happening. It was like there was no logical reason for it. And I remember our owners one day looking at this plat map, and they were talking. I don't even know why they were looking at it. There would be have been no, like literally at that point, no reason for them to be looking at it. And they were talking about, someone was like, they were talking about, like, we got to do a drain, like a French drain in her yard. And long story short, the owner of our company realized that they had misdrawn the lines, and there was an Indian mound, a Native American mound,
Boy.
within like 150 feet of her back property line. And everybody went, "Oh." And even I knew it was federal law, like there was a buffer that had to be there. And it's like, I wonder if that has anything to do. Because you're
Interesting.
disturbing the peace. You literally are disturbing someone, you're that's like not cool. And it was like, like I don't know how to fix that, but I bet you that's part of it. And like I've learned so much since then that I'm like, yeah, that's just, you can't do that. You really, if you know that there's things like that, you gotta be super careful because there's another one that was that's somewhere that's in Virginia that they had a family graveyard and they relocated like two graves and because they were building a highway. And they had to relocate. I think it was like, this is probably going back 20 years now easily, but they eventually had to rebuild the highway. Like they had to like literally go back and like reconfigure this entire highway the way they were originally going to do it in the first place, mind you, because there were so many deaths at this weird place. And it was like when they realized that, like, yeah, we moved to physical graves to make room for this highway. It's like y'all, like I mean, we're 20, we're 2,000 plus years after the death of Christ. Like you would think so. I'm like I'm somebody would have been like, dude, this is, and it's like, oh no, someone did, and they just weren't gonna listen. They were like, that's just, that's just, you're that's just weird talk and whatever. It's like, God. Well, that explains a whole lot now, doesn't it?
People forget that there was a whole society that lived here before us, leaving their own energy,
Well, yeah, I mean, and again, over and over and over again, because like I read a house a couple years ago, and up in Virginia, and I said, "What year was your house built?" And she told me, I said, "Was there another house that existed here? Because I'm like, I'm not seeing the footprint of your house. I'm seeing the footprint of another house that was faced like her house now faces the main street road this way, and the house was facing this way." And I'm like, so it was like a two tenant, two family house that was facing, and there would have been a road here going all the way through. And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Okay." So I'm reading this first energy. They never cleared it. So the weird stuff you've had, some of the weird stuff you've happened and you had happened in your house now happened before, because again, they still would do that like we do today, and people freak out because, and I'm not a proponent of it, but I do know when someone buys a house, they can do anything they want, including raise it. And they did that. You know, 150, 200 years ago, people would demolish one thing and build something else on it.
Right.
And you still will see that. Like when I do readings, I will still see that like first. And I'm like, you know, and there was another house that I read and I said, did this used to be a field? He's like, well, yeah, before they built. And I said, did it, you, and there's a cemetery back there that's older than this house. Yes. Okay. So you had people that will transient this house because they energetically, it's still a field for them.
Yeah.
They don't recognize your house. So they're just wandering right through your house, not stopping to think, oh, someone has a physical house here. I can't, don't have permission to be traipsing through somebody's house. But energetically, they, because they're a different dimension, they're on a different timeline. They don't understand that it's 2022 at the time of my doing this. They don't understand that this is someone's physical house and you're not allowed to do that. You need to go, you know, around. Yeah. But it's, I mean, I just, you know, again, I delight in these things. I think they're just so cool. And I think that being able to honor that and see the things and share with other people is just, it's a huge blessing.
Right.
Huge blessing to do it.
Right. You know, as a history guy, you know, that was my major in college and all that. To me, I mean, nobody really takes the time. I mean, we go through life, right? And we always look forward. We never, I mean, there was a whole world, you know, wouldn't you want to learn about it, you know, the whole history of it. But, you know, most people, nah, forget about it. I just want to see what's in front of me. And that's it. And if people, you know, read more, my gosh, open up a book, you know, or if they understood that sort of stuff, it may fill in some gaps for them. You know, the understanding, but again, you got people that I don't know what's going on, and it takes you to have to go through there and explain it, you know, walk them through it.
Well, you know, I think too is, you know, the notion that once it's gone, it's gone. Yeah. That fails. A lot of people don't understand that, you know, if you're in a space where, you know, for example, you know, I live in North Carolina. And as they're building up downtown Raleigh, they are, you know, we are losing buildings. We are losing, you know, some of our 100 plus year old brick buildings. We are losing, and you're losing history.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of times we forget that, you know, it's not just the building, it's who built the building and, you know, all those pieces that come with it. And like you said, when we lose, people don't understand that, you know, when we lose history, it's like, you know, teaching people about, you know, when I tell people, I'm like, you know why they don't want people to learn cursive?
Yeah.
And I was telling someone this a couple of years ago, and I did hours of research. Like I went through and really, really did some deep research on it. And I said, can you read the founding documents? Like if you saw an original copy of like the Declaration of Independence or the U.S. Constitution as originally written, I'm like, can you read it? And they're like, and I'm like, you know, you might not understand all the words, but can you read enough of the cursive to make out what their original intention was?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yes. I'm like, okay, so if you're in a space where you're not taught how to write or read cursive, then future generations can be told by people who have nefarious intentions anything they want about what the Constitution says.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in a whole different space. And they're like, I don't understand. I'm like, well, here's the thing. You know how 200 years ago, slaves weren't allowed to read? How there's places in the world today where women are not allowed to learn how to read and write.
Sure.
Where the Taliban doesn't teach children how to read and write.
Mm-hmm.
Especially women.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in the early Middle Ages, the Catholic Church, they're frowned upon people being able to read and write because, you know, it's that manipulation of power.
Correct.
You know?
And it's traveled through time. And it's like you said, you know, if we're in a space where someone doesn't know how to read, they're disempowered.
Yeah.
And when you're in a space where you teach people how to read, you teach them how to know things, And they get to a space where it's like, if you're, you know, a thing, it's like even today, you know, when someone goes, I want to go read the bill before you vote on it. The most powerful things you can say to your elected officials is, I read the bill.
Right.
Because you've never seen someone lose color out of their face faster than if you say, I read the bill.
Yeah.
Or show me the bill.
Right.
Show me the context. Show me. Oh, you know, I remember that insurance companies don't allow you to approve something that is, you know, an emergency use authorization, or it doesn't have a white paper or a peer-reviewed paper, you know, published paper in a journal. So could I see the white paper on that? Could I see a draft of the, you know, peer-reviewed journal article that's in the JAMA or the New England Journal of Medicine before you publish it? Could I see that so that I could read over it because I'd like to know? And they look at you like you have three heads.
Right.
Because again, if you're reading, if you can read, if you can write, you are empowered.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people, when they enter, like, I'm like, if you understood the history of this, you would know why someone's trying so hard to protect this. Because it's not just, oh, you're demolishing an old building, that's really sad. Yeah, I'm gonna be the first person to tell you, I love a beautiful restored wood window. Sure. I love the history that is entrenched in 200-year-old wide plank wood floors.
Yep.
I love the old fashioned doors. I love the latch doors. I love 8-prong, you know, door latches. You know, I love all those things. I love, you know, looking at like handcrafted corbels, looking at, you know, the old like triple crown molding in houses and knowing that all of that was done by hand. Looking at a fresco that's 200 years old and knowing that someone was upside down on their back on scaffolding, hand painting all of that.
Yeah.
Is such a gorgeous thing to me. Like losing that would be heartbreaking for a number of reasons, right? That human being that was taught how to, you know, hand carve those things with a tool that's the size of my pen and for hours just.
Yeah. Yeah.
All those little things.
I grew up in an older house and I remember, you know, looking at the moldings on the ceiling and the banisters and everything like that and the craftsmanship that went into it. And I always thought that was really cool that we had this, you know, in other modern houses, you know, are just generic, right? They don't have that really cool craftsmanship that really personalizes that house.
Yes. You know? And it's like years ago, I was at was visiting a plantation. And I was looking at the steel and the docent said, what are you looking at? And I said, I'm just trying to see if any of this has been, I said, has any of this been replaced? And she was like, no, I think it's all original, you know, from the house from the 18, whatever it was, you know? And I said, actually, I said, that piece and that piece have been replaced. And my mom was looking at me like, when the docent was like, what in the world? And I said, do you see the seam right there?
Yeah.
And she said, yeah. I said, now, do you notice when you look at these other ones, there's no seam? And she said, yes. I said, do you know how these are all made? And again, it's one of those weird things that I go down a rabbit hole and you know how something is made and I go do my research.
Yeah.
But she was like, I don't. And I said, okay, so back when you had steel, you would liquefy, you could bury it hot so you could pull it and liquefy it and you could play with it, right? And I said, okay, so you're pulling that thing. You have a tool that looks like a diamond with two handles on it. And I said, and the diamond was probably like, the opening of it was probably like, in this case, I said, it was like probably 3/4 of an inch, an inch.
Yeah.
And I said, so as you're making this and you're making the diamond shape, you're pulling it. And as you're trying to get that twist, you're twisting, twisting, pulling and twisting. Right. And she goes, yeah. And I said, as opposed to this piece where it's a frame. She goes, okay. I said, so they have a molding already.
Yeah.
At Lowe's or Home Depot or wherever they're making it, doesn't really matter. And they're pouring steel into a frame. They're pressing that down. They know how long it takes to do that. They pull it up, they plop it out, and they go on to the next one.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay. And I said, as opposed to the whole, the craftsmanship that I said, my point is not to indict anybody. My point was simply to say that a lot of times we don't realize the intrinsic craftsmanship
Mm-hmm.
that went into like making the nails or twisting the wetting and twisting wood to make staircases.
Yeah.
Like how the engineering behind the floating staircase is just awesome. whether you're an architectural buff or not, just realizing like how we do it in 2023 versus like how you did it by hand back then is just like, I completely geek out over things like that. Just because I think it's so cool how all that had to be done by hand. And like looking at like, you go, if you've ever been to Charleston, South Carolina, like how all that came together and being like, wow, how they built all that, like that's 200 plus years old, dude. Like that is just like looking at that and being like, oh my God, like how they got all that in place when they didn't have the tools and the modern that we have now. It's just like, and all those things that if you touch them again, as a medium, I can go and put my hand on it and get a whole history.
Right.
It's just like unbelievably cool.
Right. And the time too, because no one wants to spend the time to do it. You know, you just slap up the house, move to the next one, slap that up. It's a business. And you don't get that. And to me, all that cool personalized craftsmanship, to me, and I may be totally wrong, right? But to me, it has its own power.
100%. It totally. And the thing is, again, you're in the space of, you know, again, you go back to like, you know, there was a house that was on this house page that I followed, and it was built in, I want to say like 1817 or something like that, right? So it's antebellum. And someone on the page said they just need to burn it down. That was built by slaves and it needs to be burned. And I said, you know, I debated strongly whether I was going to stay, because I know the person owns the page personally. And I went, like, do I say so? And I was one of those things where I came back around, and normally I could see a house once, I might comment on it and keep going or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And it kept showing up in my feed. So I finally was like, how do I like respect, again, going into the Akashic Records and saying, give me the right words. So I don't, you know, I want to be respectful of the fact that.
Sure.
So I went in and I typed this whole thing out and I said, you know, reality is that every person that was a crafts person has their energy and their special craft, their gift from God in this house. So some people were the person who whittled the wood. Someone was the one that cut the trees down and got hand-hewn logs.
Yeah.
The person who took the, you know, again, melded the steel into the door hinges. The person who made the door lock. The person who, you know, crafted the bricks by hand. The person who made the mortar. The person who built the fireplace by hand. The person who, you know, put the boards up, built the framing, all these things that are all intrinsic, you know, made the plaster to go over the lathe, you know, the whole, all those little pieces, you know, handcrafted the windows. The fact that you're looking at 8/8 windows, which means the people had money, but not a lot, you know, the more like they had money because you know they're 8/8. And the smaller you got with a piece of glass, the more expensive it was to create it. You know, the hand-blown glass, all these little pieces that the latch is done a certain way, the etching in the glass, things that people just look at today. And a lot of times, like, oh, that's really pretty. And they don't understand that. It's like, I'm not asking you to keep doing everything you can if you own a historic or an antique house. I'm not asking you to keep that because I'm trying to be a pain in the ass. I'm asking you to keep it and restore it because that is intrinsic to the house. And once that's gone.
Yeah.
Those people's energy that built the frame, put the glass in there, put the other half of the window frame down to create that original glass, the bubbles that were used to make, if you've ever seen glass panes made now versus back then, like all these different things that are processes that doesn't exist anymore. It's just, I mean, and yes, there are still people that do that craftsmanship, that hand, and there are artisans in this country who you go to, can go to, who besides just the Amish who are incredible, but there's also people who they hand make the glass.
Yeah.
If you need a replica, you can do that. And you can get all those pieces and get like all the things, components that come into a house. And a lot of times people don't even realize like how a house is built. I mean, again, when I used to work in new construction, I would see a house from like land development to post house to closing it, to the service department. So I got to know how all those different things worked and whatever. But it's so amazing to even look at the fact that those people whether they were enslaved or, you know, indentured or free, it doesn't matter. They got, and I'm not dismissing it, but I'm saying is that that was purest craftsmanship.
Yeah.
And being able to be in a space where you were hand making bricks versus the way we do brick moldings today. Like we do bricks whole different way. Like I've gone down all these different rabbit holes because I wanted to know, like, why am I so, I mean, basically I was just so excited because I just geek out on history and architecture, but I wanted to really understand like the minutia of it. Like, how does this come into play? How does this come into being? And, you know, living in North Carolina where there's so much history and like being from Boston where, again, there's so much history and like being in a space now where like I know that there's so much that's gone in, like you have select sections like Back Bay in Boston, Beacon Hill in Boston, like the Meeting House in Boston, like things that have been saved and preserved, right? But there's also a lot that we have bulldozed for that are lost. So like now I'm in the space of like it's starting to happen in Raleigh where it's like, you know, and trying to be in the space where understanding that, you know, no, like I said at the very beginning, you know, we're none of us as humans are perfect. We're not even close. We're humans, right? But I would never want to, you know, cut off my, you know, chop my mouth, you know, chop my lips up because I've said things that I regret. I would never want to be like, oh, I stepped in something I shouldn't have stepped in. So let me just chop off my finger, my toes. By the same token, you know, we are an imperfect nation of and we are an imperfect world. And, you know, if you don't believe in God, then, you know, use the verbiage that works for you here. But I'm a very big believer that God doesn't make mistakes. And that, you know, he created this perfect, imperfect world for us to learn and to, you know, hopefully, you know, strive to keep that which is, you know, examples of human industrialism. And I feel like, you know, even like old, you know, old horse and buggies. And, you know, there was one I saw a couple of years ago, and I don't remember even where I was, but I just remember, I want to say it was in somebody's barn. Like it was a completely random thing. And I completely lost it. Like I was so geeked out because this was a probably 150-year-old wagon. And it was very, like it had the, and I didn't want to touch it, but it was like, that looks like crushed velvet. That is like, I'm like, that is tufted crushed velvet. And I was like, oh my God, do you realize like those are the original springs and someone sat on the, and they were like, okay. And I just, but again, I feel like it's important to remember that, you know, you're a history buff like me. So it's like one of those things where you want to say, you know, we need to learn like all the things before we, because that, you know, I tell people, I understand that we want to move forward and that we got to make progress and we can't save everything. I'm fully at peace with that. But I also feel like it's real important to remember that once it's gone, it's gone.
Right.
And, you know, we can't go, oops, I didn't mean to do whatever. We got to be in the space of how, part of how we honor history, part of how we honor people, whether they were free or enslaved or indentured or some other situation, is by holding those things, those buildings, those lands dear. And I, again, I'm very cognizant that we can't save everything. And sometimes, you know, something is too far gone to, although for me, telling me something is too, it would pretty much have to be collapsing on itself for me to call it too far gone. Because I've seen some pretty huge miracles as far as like true restoration is concerned. But I feel like one of the ways that we honor people is by honoring their work. And by honoring, you know, being in the space of saying, okay, and again, you know, going in and saying this person handcrafted this. And I'm complete awe of the fact that like I look at a friend of mine is restoring a 1856 house right now, which was original footprint was 1803. And they are doing their very damnedest to restore, like a true restoration. So of course they've got to have AC and they've got to have electrical and they've got to have plumbing. But as far as like trying to keep everything as close to historically accurate as possible.
Right.
And so going through and being like, these are the steps. Like we're saving, the servant steps and we're saving the grand staircase. And these pieces have to be redone. So we're deconstructing this to have it taken to somebody to do. But just like those little pieces that,
Yeah.
matter and being in the space of like, yeah, there's some things that you cannot do. And sometimes you don't realize like something is so rotted out that there's no saving it. But I also feel like, again, when I read houses and I say, I'll ask the question, and I did this a couple weeks ago for somebody that I can do electronically. And I messaged this woman. I said, do you want, because she was, going through this whole huge debate. I said, do you want me to ask the house? And I said, I'm a house medium. Normally I charge this much money, but I'm not going to charge you because I just found this on this public page. And I'm just wondering. And she's like, I don't know what you're doing,
Yeah.
but sure. And I said, she's like, there's no money involved. I said, nope. I said, but I feel like you need clarification. I feel like you need some peace of mind and heart around what the next steps are. And she's like, that
Yeah.
would be cool. So I did. And she ended up saying, can I give you a donation? Can I give you a donation of some kind? I said, sure, you can. Absolutely. But that wasn't why I was doing it. I was doing it because I saw this person who had made this post saying, we're totally conflicted on what to do. And oh my God, and da da da. And I was like, let's just see what the house has to say.
Yeah.
And I said, does that resonate with you? And she said, I have chills all over. And I'm sitting here on the floor of my bedroom, sobbing my eyes out because I'm so thankful that you saw this and reached out to me because now I have clear direction. And now I don't feel an ounce of guilt. I know exactly what I need to do. And it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And, sometimes that's the best thing I can do in a day is to share with someone like, this is what you get to do. And you have permission because a lot of times we just need permission.
Yeah.
So it's, I that's one of my favorite things is, sometimes you just inadvertently people don't realize they need permission to do a thing sometimes. It's like,
Right.
here, I have no skin in this game. Permission, go.
Right. Hey, Jilly, it has been just fantastic talking to you. I gotta throw this out there right now. We gotta have you back
Happy
because
to come back.
I've got a billion more questions, and I find it so fascinating what you do, and I appreciate so much of what you do that I want to know more and more and more and more.
Absolutely.
And so one of the cool things is at the end of the show, I'll recognize that my neck hurts because I've been, bobbleheading, and that's a sign of, so we got to de get definitely got to get you on again. I think this has been so fascinating and so interesting. And I think hopefully if just one person can hear it, right? Even if it's just one person and it helps them change their life. To me, mission accomplished,
100%. I'm the same way. If one person hears it, if one person's inspired, if one person, I've had people say, I got help because of you. I walked up to someone and told them my whole life story and then apologized and then, found a therapist because of you. I did this and I'm like, you know what? Mission accomplished.
Right. Yeah, and one of the major tenets of the show is to let people know that this is a safe space. You're always getting judged in your life. This is a place where you can come on, talk about your experiences, and totally be open. Not only because I find it so fascinating, but just because I'm in awe. I mean, I'm thick, all right? I have no gifts at all, and so but it makes me appreciate that more those who do, and everyone's got a story, and they're safe here to tell their story. And so Jilly, fantastic, man. I can already tell this show is going to be a two-parter. I'll come up with some cliffhanger, some special effects. Oh, what's going to happen next, Joe? Anyway, but thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You got it. That was a great interview with Jilly Maria, psychic medium. Hope to have her on again real soon. Hey, if you want to voicemail us, you can voicemail us at 971-205-2464. Again, 971-205-2464. And you can also email us at midnightalchemyshow@gmail.com. Midnightalchemyshow@gmail.com. com. All right, I'm going to be riding off into the sunset here. I feel like I'm coming down with the cold, so I'm going to stow it until next episode. Thank you for tuning in. Be kind to each other and yourselves, and Arrivederci.